Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. And we're not live.
We're not live. I'm technically not here, but I am. How confusing. Yeah, we're in Chicago this weekend. Our whole team from The Wine Growers in the middle of a big event that we haven't done in a long time. So really excited. It's our kind of version of what we used to do called Sonoma in the City that we would do with tourism and Vintners. This year, Vintners is joining us in Chicago, as well as several AVAs and over 30 wineries. Mm. So we do this. It's a new partnership we have with the Let Us Entertain You restaurants. So folks might know them from like the RPM Steak, RPM Seafood, mm-hmm. Italian, Mon Ami Gabby. So they, have, I want to say, over 100 different restaurants.
Do they have any in California? Or are they really sort of more Midwest?
Yeah, there's a couple in Vegas. For sure, I know there's a Mon Ami Gabby there, so I think they've expanded that far, but not any in California. I'll have to go look at that again. Mm. But we connected with them when we started going back to Chicago for our Bears partnership.
What do you know?
And they're based there, and when I lived there, had several restaurants I used to frequent, so really fun. And supposedly they are the original salad bar.
Oh, really?
Which is at RJ Grunt's, which is in Chicago, thus lettuce spelled out lettuce.
Yep,
instead of lettuce. Entertain you.
Original salad bar.
Supposedly, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've been to RJ Grunt's, one of the best burgers as well.
You don't think Sizzler was the original salad bar? I don't know.
I think the Grunt's was way before Sizzler.
Okay, could be. I think there's a story here.
Yeah, there might be. That could be a good stuff.
Where did the salad bars start?
Right.
And what was in it? Was there actually salad?
And how has it evolved?
Yeah. Just like a couple pieces of lettuce and everything else was steak bits.
And then was the salad bar the precursor to like the buffet?
I think it would have been the other way around.
The buffet happened and then people said focus on salads?
Yeah, with the prime rib carving, all that kind of stuff.
I don't know. I think there's some reconnaissance there. Yeah, research needs to be done on that. But we're excited. We're doing, because of Let Us Entertain You, they have several of their restaurants in Chicago as well as their headquarters. So on today, March 1st, we are doing a consumer grand tasting masterclass, 400 to 500 consumers.
That's great.
Super excited about that. So the wineries have their tables, AVAs have their tables, tourism has their tables. We will also be doing Sonoma County Tourism is doing a media lunch, so we're going to support them in that. Some of our winery partners are pouring for that.
Nice.
They're doing a partner reception. Some of our winery partners are pouring for that. So it's a bit of a Chicago-Sonoma County takeover.
I love it.
Which, you know, Chicago's a great wine market. So
incredible. Yeah. Incredible food city. Incredible. That's great.
Yeah.
Wine is very important there.
And Binny's, which is sort of their regional version of like a Total Wine, is also hosting several of our wineries to do a tasting on the Friday. So it'd be yesterday, not today. All confusing since we're pre-recording, but to do a little sampling and tasting too. So we're really media with tourism, sampling, tasting with Binny's to give the winery partners an extra sort of outreach there, and then a great masterclass and consumer event on Saturday. So lots of great stuff.
Taking over the world.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's really exciting. And I think events like that really do make a difference when the wineries can directly connect with consumers in a region.
Yeah. And are you seeing like attendance at those types of events is still very healthy?
Very healthy. Like really healthy. Early ticket sales, I mean, in the first like week and a half, 2 weeks of ticket sales, we had already sold 300 tickets to the event. So,
incredible.
I mean, you know, it helps to have a partner that has those lists of consumers that already food and wine. So versus I think historically we used to go into markets and try to like find those consumers ourselves as a wine region.
Yeah, which is hard.
Partnerships really hard. Are the way to go. So, and they've been just great partners. So.
Okay.
I know. Really exciting. We'll get to report back next time on what all went down.
And you're not thinking about staying for St. Patrick's Day in Chicago?
I know, right? Well, having lived there a few years, it is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to see the river turn green for St. Patrick's Day and literally
they get into it.
That's like a bigger holiday than almost any other holiday in all of Chicago.
Big parades, too.
Big parades. Yeah. super fun. Sadly, I normally would be working when I was there, but that's right. All right.
It's not actually a national holiday. Yeah, it's sometimes not. We treat it as such.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is extremely good stuff and lots to look forward to. And it'll be good to hear your report when you get back.
And then we go from there to Vegas for our other restaurant partners, Landry's GM conference. And then from there, we head down to Houston for the Rockets. So it's going to be a full week of travel.
All right. Sonoma County is everywhere.
As it should be.
As it should be. All right. We'll be right back. We'll take a quick break before we introduce our guest on today's Good Stuff. On the Good Stuff, and our guest today in studio, Chris is very excited, is Chris Hanna, president of Hanna Winery. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks you for joining us. Oh, of course. So, my God, where to begin?
At the beginning, like
I know,
like
Chris often likes to say, tell us everything from the start. Where'd you grow up? How did you grow up? I mean, we know a lot about your story that we'll get to going forward, but did you grow up in Sonoma County? I actually don't know the answer to that.
I grew up in San Francisco. I was born and raised in San Francisco, one of the few San Franciscans actually born there at old Presbyterian Hospital. And we lived in the foggiest, drippiest part of the city up on Mount Davidson.
So cheery.
Yeah.
Exactly. And luckily, my father was excited about having a place in the country to go to on the weekends. Mm. He had grown up on a farm, sort of missed that for us, was slightly annoyed that we five kids were total city kids. And
Where'd he grow up on a farm?
He grew up in the Middle East in Syria.
Oh, wow.
And he's a Syrian Christian. And right on the border between Lebanon and Syria is an enclave of Syrian Christians. And his father was a farmer, and his father before that was a farmer, et cetera, et cetera.
So what were they farming?
They were farming peanuts. Mm-hmm. They were farming table grapes. And then they had stone fruit, mostly apricots.
Wow. All right.
And my grandfather ran the farm until he got bitten by a rattlesnake on the farm and lost his leg. And then my grandmother, who had six children, also ran the farm with six kids. She was the OG, you know, multitasker.
My God.
Yeah.
So that is incredible.
That was his background. You know, then, as you can imagine, there wasn't a path for Syrian Christians in Syria. So he was a smart kid. They pushed him ahead to school. He was the youngest of six. So my grandmother, who was multitasking, was like, get this kid to school and out of my hair.
Get him out of here. Yeah.
And so he ended up coming to the U.S. To go to college and med school.
Okay.
And made his life here.
That's not a small thing.
No.
No, it is not a small thing.
Yeah.
Was he the only one of his family that left or who went to the U.S.?
He was the first one. And then his brother came after him. His other brothers and his sister stayed in Syria.
And so was the medical school path, was that his choice or was that just what was expected?
That was his choice. He was the first one to really get past probably third grade in his family. So he was really good at math, really good at science, hopeless at language. Mm-hmm. And so that became an obvious. Yeah. And that was back in the day when, as long as you did your medical school prereqs, you could do 2 years of college. You could do 2 years of college. You didn't have to do general ed requirements. Hmm. And so he got through college in 2 years, a fact that he loves to remind us of to this day.
Right.
And then went off to med school and then got drafted into a MASH unit at Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
And performed a sort of surgical first and started his cardiac surgery career, you know, here in California.
Okay, so
in Northern California.
So lots of questions along the way, though. Yeah. Where's the first place he came to in the United States?
University of Texas to go to college, and then he went to Tulane in New Orleans for medical school, and then came to San Francisco.
Okay, so from Syria to Texas, yeah. I have many, many questions.
Yes. Such a natural transition, don't you think?
He had a cousin.
It's warm, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a cousin who was in Texas.
Okay.
So, you know, my dad speaks with a heavy Arabic accent. Mm. In combination with a New Orleans drawl and a Texas twang.
Amazing.
Oh, my gosh. So
it's
I love that.
Slightly impenetrable, you know, but lovable.
So San Francisco, I'm assuming UCSF. Was he working there? Or
no,
was
he was working at St. Mary's Hospital, and he started the cardiac program there. There was no cardiac program anywhere in San Francisco at that point. Wow. And UCSF wasn't doing cardiac surgery either. So
Incredible.
He started the program, and then by the time he had retired, he was operating at five different hospitals. So he was a busy guy.
Yeah. And so somewhere along the way, he says, these kids are out of control. They're driving me crazy. We need a country place.
Yeah. And Occidental Road in Santa Rosa was exactly 1 hour from the house, and he figured, you know, if I have an emergency case, I can get back to the city in an hour.
So, that used to be the day.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Not anymore. So, and it was funky. You know, this was back before Russian River Valley was an AVA,
yeah.
And we were flanked by, and still are, a dairy farm on one side and a horse ranch on another. And it was super funky. The house was super funky. I think my mother was frankly horrified, but but we loved it. You know, we were cooped up in the house in the city and foggy and drippy. And, you know, we got to the farm and we planted a vegetable garden and we had a big orchard and we chased the chickens around and terrorized 12 head of steer out in the back. It was great.
Oh my gosh.
All mucky in the, you know, in the creek. And there was a big barn and, you know, we'd go play in there. It was awesome.
So did Sonoma County lead to an interest in wine, or was there already an interest in wine that led to Sonoma County?
For my dad, there was always an interest in wine because he obviously didn't grow up in the wine culture at
right.
all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Syria is a Muslim country, they don't drink wine, and the Syrian Christians are such a small part of it that it didn't. You know, their habits didn't influence. So, you know, as he became more acculturated in the U.S. and would go and have dinner at colleagues' houses, and, you know, he discovered wine and thought it was great. And we took a number of trips as kids. We went to Bordeaux and Burgundy. I remember being 14 years old and, you know, they would pour wine for me at every, you know,
Amazing.
Winery and chateau. I'm like, this is fun.
Yeah, I'm staying here.
I still remember, I have this wonderful sense memory of, you know, the crunch of gravel, because there you could put your barrels on, you know, barrel stands right on the gravel.
Mm.
Can't do that here.
Yeah.
And I remember that trip so clearly and going to wineries with my dad and eating amazing meals and all of that. And it was after that trip that he decided, well, let's try our hand at winemaking. And I was
wow.
the oldest of the five kids, and so I became assistant winemaker, and we had a book in front of us and followed
oh
the recipe. And
sort of self-taught.
Totally.
Is that right?
And,
okay.
You know, the good vintages we gave away to friends, and the not-so-great vintages we used as marinade for one of the head of cattle out in the back. And that, you know, that's really how it all started.
So
that is awesome.
Okay,
I'm processing all of that. What a story.
So get to the starting the winery part.
Yeah.
Originally,
yeah.
Is it just as home winemakers and you're just sort of playing around, or was it legit like we're going to start a winery with our name on it and sell commercially?
The intention was we're going to start a winery with our name on it, and that was very intentional. We actually hired Mary Edwards as our consulting winemaker, who was just
good move.
A
yeah.
gift
yeah.
in so many ways.
Mm.
Really a mentor, not just in winemaking, but just how to move through what was then a very male-dominated
For sure.
industry,
mm-hmm.
particularly mm. at the viticulture and winemaking side.
Yeah.
You know, there are some women in PR and marketing, but very few on the winemaking, viticultural, and general management side. So she was great. She taught me how to be fearless and super direct.
Yeah.
And
that sounds like her.
Yeah.
I will always thank her for that. So so she really helped us get started. And then a few years went by, and And, you know, my dad was a busy cardiac surgeon, and it became very clear to me that if we wanted a family winery with our name on it, somebody needed to, you know, live here and be in the business day to day. So I got involved and moved to Santa Rosa at first. I lived on the winery property, and what a great time that was in the early 90s to be in this business. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was such an experimental time. Mm-hmm. There were fewer wineries. We were sort of like a merry band of, you know, folks learning from each other. And, you know, there were the Italian families that actually knew what they were doing.
Right.
There were other people who were so generous. Like Tim Murphy, for example, was that person that I could call if I was stuck on something. And it didn't really matter what it was, whether it was farming or winemaking or, you know, being out in the world working with distributors. He was such a sweetheart and so generous with advice. And that was the vibe then. You know, we would do these fun little road shows, and there weren't that many of us. And so you really felt like you were in it together.
What was the original vision? I mean, what did you, I mean, you hire Mary Edwards, you know, you're in Russian River.
Yeah.
What was the original vision? Like,
well, you know, if you ask my dad, he would say, I want to make the best wine in the world. And bless his heart, he's, you know, he is the original sort of entrepreneurial risk taker, you know, guy who came from Syria with nothing and made something of himself. What became very clear to me pretty early on is we better figure out what we're going to be about. And the answer to that was Russian River Sauvignon Blanc. And over time, that, you know, that scaled and became such a big part of our story. And it sounds sort of obvious, like, oh, well, big deal. So you decided to make Russian River Sauvignon Blanc. But you have to remember at that time, this was Chardonnay world. I mean, Sonoma County Chardonnay was the thing, and it was a super crowded category. And yes, there were people making Sauvignon Blanc, but we were making it like Chardonnay. We were barrel fermenting it. We were barrel aging it. We were mostly planting it in warmer areas. So there was an opportunity to do something different and to make something punchier, more tank fermented, grow it in a cool climate area. And I really liked the notion of that and to be able to tell a story that was different.
And delicious.
And delicious. But intriguing. I mean, I'm just sort of intrigued because, I mean, even at that point, I don't think Mary Edwards had even gone that deep into Sauvignon Blanc, right?
I mean, she was all about Chardonnay, really. And and secondarily, Pinot Noir was really before she got... she became famous for Pinot Noir. So Chardonnay was her thing. And so Sauvignon Blanc was definitely more of a risk. We had it planted at our Alexandria Valley Vineyard. And, you know, it was flat and flabby to me and not very interesting. And we had bought a property on Slusser Road that we developed, Cross Street River Road. Mm-hmm. And that ranch has become... to us, just the anchor of the Sauvignon Blanc program, and makes such great Sauvignon Blanc if you treat it properly. You know, water table's really high, soil's really fertile, so you've really got to tamp down. If it wants to, it can. You know, we could do 14 tons an acre easily there. That doesn't make delicious Sauvignon Blanc. Yeah. So you've really got to take care of that vineyard and baby it, and it makes just spectacular Sauvignon Blanc that works for our program. And with the tank fermented Sauvignon Blanc, the fruit's got to be perfect because there aren't any, you know, there aren't any cheats. There's no barrel fermentation that's going to give it mouthfeel. So, and as we've grown, we've asked growers to work with us to emulate the kind of style that we use. And some are willing to, and some aren't.
Well, and we do love your main grower, Duff Bevel. So
he's fantastic.
Yes,
we've been working with each other for decades, and there's such value in that. Duff's also great in that. You know, this is a cyclical business. We're in a downturn in the business, and we have to remember that we've been through this before with recessions and declines in consumption and global gluts and. you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And I think those brands that have a point of view and have a reason for being have a better chance of hanging on.
Agreed.
And these long established relationships, I think, right. where you've seen it happen. You're not going to panic. You're going to work together.
And you've done the give and take.
Yeah.
And several times.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And we're also not making dumb decisions. You know, we're not going to reduce quality. We're not going to cut costs.
Yeah.
By reducing quality. That never works.
Right.
So, you know, there are ways to work through a downturn that are better for a brand than others.
Okay. Well, with that, we're going to take a quick break. We will come back soon with our guest, Chris Hanna, President, Hanna Winery. Stuff with our guest, Chris Hanna, president of Hanna Winery. So much great history. My curiosity, I mean, you're talking about kind of these long-term relationships and the cycles, but when you were first putting together your vision for what Hanna Winery would be, I mean, was Sauvignon Blanc, Russian River Valley Sauvignon Blanc even something you could source pretty widely, or were you creating a category?
We're creating a category. So we literally planted it at our Slessor Road Vineyard on the hunch that it would be more interesting than what we had at Alexander Valley or
and
what we could buy.
And at the time, you couldn't find any other Russian River Sauvignon Blanc, really?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't around.
Yeah,
you know, and we did a similar thing, you know, 10 years ago with Malbec. We couldn't find Malbec. We were looking for an alternative to blend into our Alexander Valley Cabernet. And we were struggling with the Merlot. The Merlot on that Alexander Valley ranch was, you know, pretty high pyrazine, kind of, you know, green, a little bit weedy, and high tannin. So surprisingly, high tannin, and so we'd find the heck out of it, and you know, whack at it, and do all these things that really ultimately just strip the flavor. So we started looking for another variety to blend in, and thought, let's try Malbec. It's juicier, it's earlier ripening, and couldn't find it. So we ended up planting it at Alexander Valley. So that's been our default. Answer to things. If we can't find it, we're just going to plant it ourselves.
Yeah.
So we planted 10 acres of Malbec at Alexander Valley, which ends up being the best blender ever for our Cabernet. Gives us exactly what we're looking for. So yeah, so we planted Sauvignon Blanc and then at Slessor, and then had the advantage of being able to really try the Sauvignon Blanc side by side from the two ranches just to thoroughly emphasize that we had made the right decision focusing on the Russian River Valley. The aromatics to me on the Sauvignon Blanc are so important, and it's when it's too warm, you really bake out all those beautiful aroma compounds, those thiols that you can get with Sauvignon Blanc. Russian River Valley lets us do that. Although the viticulture has evolved as climate has evolved and as we have more extremes, and so we're working harder than ever out there in the vineyard to try to retain the cool climate characteristics of the Sauvignon Blanc.
So you did some of these early travels with your family to regions of France and to learn a little bit about wine. And then it's like you've done so much learning by doing.
Yeah.
But at some point, did you take another education path? Like, did you have any times when you weren't thinking about doing wine?
Yes, I was going to be an English professor and, you know. Be an academic. So that was my, you know, that was my plan. I mean, I went to school and thought, wow, I can get a degree just by reading and writing about what I wrote. Excellent. Or writing about what I read. That was my plan. And then really the business just called to me. Yeah. As I said before, it just seemed inconceivable that we'd have a family business and nobody in the family involved in the day to day. And I think the thing that's so wonderful about the wine business is it's really at the confluence of so many different skills, right? Yeah. You're farming, so you're outside growing things. You're making wine, which has a science component. You know, you're writing and talking about wine, which, you know, for us sort of humanities people is appealing. There's a poetic aspect, an artistic aspect to it, as well as a scientific aspect to it. So
and a cultural and social and all those things.
And, you know, and Sonoma County happens to be a great place to raise a family and, you know, raise kids and be. So win-win-win as far as...
I'm with you. Win-win-win. Yes. Yeah. What about the business side? I mean, did you... Because you kind of run the business side and have for a long time. Was that something that was more challenging for you to learn, or how much has it changed? Or
Interestingly, the business side was not hard for me to learn. You know, although I'm a humanities lover, I am a numbers lover. So business math makes every bit of sense in the world to me. What is harder, I think, is you've got to decide if you're going to make decisions through a short-term lens or a long-term lens. And we all know that when you're farming, you have to look through a long-term lens. So I think the interesting part of that is creating a narrative for why. When the numbers don't make sense in the short term, how do you create a narrative for why this makes sense in the long term? And I certainly had, especially in the early years, I certainly had to do some tap dancing, you know, not just with the family, but with bankers and all of that as to why, you know, we needed money to replant a vineyard or develop a vineyard, or why do you need to buy another vineyard, or, you know, whatever it was that we were doing. So lots of learning by doing. UC Davis back in the day had all kinds of weekend seminars. And for those of us, you know, who hadn't done that education from the get-go. And so I just go to whatever one. I went to anything that was offered. And then also wasn't afraid to just ask people about their experience.
Amazing.
I'll say, talk a little bit about the evolution. So you start on Occidental, which you still have that spot today, and people can visit.
We've got a tasting room there. It's beautiful. Looks out over the Pinot Noir vineyard.
So when do you think about the Slusser and then the move to Alexander Valley? What was sort of the thought process behind that?
Mary was very helpful. She knew that we had an appetite for, you know, for adding vineyards. And so she helped us find the Alexander Valley property, which is on Highway 128. That ranch was planted, interestingly, to French Colombard. Head pruned, sprawly French Colombard that I think they were selling to Gallo. The Feeneys owned it. They were selling to Gallo for, I don't know, $100 a ton or something like that. But Silver Oak was two doors down. I wasn't an idiot, so I thought, gee, maybe we should plant some Cabernet here. So we planted Cabernet at the Alexander Valley vineyard. Then we added the Slusser Road vineyard with the idea that we wanted to play around with Sauvignon Blanc. So and that was a completely undeveloped ranch. So we planted that from scratch. And then added the Bismarck Vineyard, which is on in the Moon Mountain AVA, Sonoma side of Mount Veeder. And then finally, my husband and I bought a vineyard in Dry Creek up on Bradford Mountain at the very end of 2000. And we've got some Italian varieties up there. So we put that fruit under the Hannah label as well. So, you know, we've always been interested in controlling our own fruit. That doesn't mean that there aren't great growers out there that have helped us, you know, grow our Sauvignon Blanc program, but it offers you a level of control and micromanagement that may not always be welcome with your growers that you can do on your own ranches. And the experimentation is important because we don't farm the same way that we did 20 years ago or even 10 years ago or, frankly, even 5 years ago. I'll give you an example if it's not too wonky. We used to leaf in the fruiting zone. We would pull leaves at the Slusser Vineyard in the fruiting zone on the morning side with the Sauvignon Blanc. That was the standard protocol to get more sunlight to the fruit, to sort of bake out some of that pyrazine, green bell pepper kind of quality. And we don't do that anymore because we found that we're just completely baking out all the flavors that we like. So we use a different technique now, which I'm not going to tell you because it's a secret.
Okay. Well, we have to take a quick break, so we'll get the secret out of you. And then when we return, we'll talk more with Chris Hanna. With Chris Hanna, president of Hanna Winery. And so are you going to tell us the secret or no?
Yes, quickly. We pull leaves actually above the fruiting zone.
Oh, okay.
So we leave all the canopy in the fruiting zone, and we pull leaves above to create photosynthesis and airflow without baking out the fruit.
Great. A little farming technique. All right.
Exactly.
I like it. Well,
others may follow.
Yeah, I was going to say, and more importantly, how do we get to try the wine, and where can we hang out with you, and what do we get to do?
Yeah,
absolutely.
All the things.
The Sauvignon Blanc is widely distributed across the country.
It's awesome.
So you can find it lots of different places at your favorite retail store. And if you don't see it at your favorite retail store, please ask for it, because that helps us. That helps us make places. Aside from that, we have not one but two tasting rooms. We've got one at the original Russian River Valley location on Occidental Road, 5 minutes from downtown Santa Rosa. And then we've got a gorgeous ranch overlooking Alexander Valley on Highway 128 outside of Healdsburg. So both of those tasting rooms open and ready for visitors. And we've got, since we make so many wines for direct-to-consumer tasting room, we've got some really interesting experiences. If you love Cabernet and want to do a flight of five Cabernets from different vineyards that we own, we've got that available. Mm-hmm. We make a sparkling Sauvignon Blanc. We've got a really interesting white wine flight with our sparkling Sauvignon Blanc, a couple of different Chardonnays, flagship Sauvignon Blanc, our reserve Sauvignon Blanc. And then we've got some food pairing. We've found a guy that makes these delicious, savory hand pies with really interesting fillings. They're really wine friendly. So aside from cheese and charcuterie, we do hand pies as well to pair with the wines. They are so good. Who doesn't love pastry?
I know.
And savory pastry.
Savory pastry.
Even better.
Yes.
Even better.
For me,
even
savory pastry. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
So, but you are also yourself a cookbook author and cooking teacher. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So can people buy your
book? She had
a lot
of free time, I was hearing, throughout the whole show.
Of course.
Right?
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Pulling leaves.
I'm having a flashback to making shish kebab for 500 people.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
It was after that event at the winery that I decided that hiring a caterer was not a bad idea.
You had other things that you had to do.
We all learn.
Exactly. But, I had done a segment for Food & Wine magazine. They were looking for wineries that had outdoor kitchens.
Yep.
And Jake and I have one at home. And so they ended up coming out and taking some photos of it and asked me for some recipes. And I submitted the recipes, and they said, you should write a cookbook. These are really good. And so I ended up shopping the book, and Chronicle Books picked it up, and away we went. So we use a lot of those recipes in events at the winery, club events, that kind of thing. So definitely California cuisine, definitely wine friendly, but with a little bit of a Middle Eastern flair.
Okay. So a little bit of your Syrian roots show through.
Exactly.
All right. Fascinating. I like that. And do you do the cooking classes at the winery ever? Can people come hang out with you?
Yeah, we do. Usually I do a cooking demonstration at least once a year. We do that. We go out to the garden and we pick some good, beautiful ingredients and then make some things out of it. So,
I like that.
Are you on TikTok yet?
No.
Or whatever will become TikTok.
I'm waiting for it to evolve.
The final word on it.
And YouTube star,
but
maybe.
But Hannah Winery and Vineyards on all the other socials.
Yeah, and hannahwinery.com for more information. HANNAwinery.com.
So is your father still involved?
No.
Okay.
He was busy with his practice, and then when he retired, he completely retired.
Yeah, so you just deliver wine to him as needed.
Exactly.
Did he have a favorite wine that you made?
Chardonnay.
Sure.
Oh my God! So, after all the
work on the Sauv Blanc, all the work on the Cabernet, exactly. Malbec, all everything, exactly. And then Chardonnay.
He's like, make me some Chardonnay.
Well, he was drawn to the Russian River Valley first.
So. For sure. Make him a special Chardonnay called Elias. That's his first name, and you know that one's for Dad.
Aww. Well, it's a lovely story. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely.
People can find Hannah Winery at hannahwinery.com. Go visit.
Yes.
Please do. We have lots of fun.
All right. We'll be right back on the good stuff. Awesome. Show. Fantastic story.
I had no idea. See, now aren't you glad that I always ask people to start at the very beginning?
I am. I'm always
glad. Because you
like
to jump in like, hey, what was your wine experience? How'd you get here? I'm like, no, tell us where you started.
Well, I just, you know, I sometimes jump around.
I know. No,
it's
like
a restless mind, I guess. I don't know.
But I wasn't expecting like to go take us to your roots and it was going to be in Syria.
Yeah. I mean, I knew a little bit parts of the story, but the power of hearing it kind of from start to finish is really, really cool. And her part of in it from the beginning as the eldest and, you know, the one that was most into it. I don't blame her.
Yeah, we did a really fun, we had some consumers in for Grape Camp a few years ago, and we went and harvested up at their Alexander Valley vineyard with her, and Duff Bevel was helping lead the charge, and beautiful property up there, too. And so many good wines. And I also love that there are wines that they make that you can access sort of and get around the country, but then also a lot of special ones that you kind of have to come to the region, go to the tasting room and try. So a nice little mix.
Yeah, I think that Hannah Sauvignon Blanc is a go-to for a lot of people.
For sure.
It's well distributed, as you say, and great price point. And
really good.
Really good.
And now we're here, there's lots of farming secrets behind it now.
I know.
So.
She divulged them, finally. All right, so Tuesday night, what are we doing?
Well, I'm going to stick with her Sauv Blanc because I haven't tried and didn't even know. So I'm excited about their Hannah Sparkling Sauvignon Blanc from the Russian River Valley. So I'm going to pop, literally. Some of that on Tuesday night. Get it? All puns intended.
I get it.
What are you going to do?
A great continuation of their story, too. Well, she mentioned the Bismarck Ranch. I think I have been up there a million years ago. It is at the very, very top of Moon Mountain. Crazy windy road. But great grapes. So 21 is the current vintage of their Bismarck Cab Franc.
Nice.
So they're doing some really cool stuff up there. I'm sure she's doing Malbec as well. I mean, she mentioned the Alexander Valley, but I'd imagine she's got it up there too.
And fun to showcase some of the Moon Mountain wines. They definitely are kind of getting a lot of distinction. So
Yeah, just very different. So they, you know, they do a good job of representing, I think, Sonoma County with those three different areas.
Yeah.
And all the different types of wine that they make. I would say completely, like, visit one of the winery tasting rooms because you'll get a real taste of everything.
Yeah, I agree. So, and go to hannahwinery.com, HANNAwinery.com.
All right. Well, from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.